Well, let me welcome you back here to Systematically Wild. I'm honored to welcome back my buddy Kevin Loco here as we close out the 2023-24 season for the final two teams that were put in action this last week here, Kevin, in the Minnesota and Iowa Wild teams. And I entered the season with a little more high hopes for the Minnesota Wild. Didn't know what we were going to see in Iowa from either team. And I don't think I was sadly disappointed by the results eventually here. But the curtain closes on the teams this season, Kevin, and we'll start with the NHL club. Your just overall thoughts as you look back on the season right now on, some thoughts that you just have as you're thinking about where the Minnesota Wild are at right now.
Well, I just think this season was just an accumulation of just about anything that could go wrong. I mean, let's start from the goaltending was not where it was a year ago. Phil Gustafson was nowhere near the goalie that he was in the 22-23 season. So you got that. You go out to the blue line. Your captain, Jared Spurgeon, only played 17 games the entire season. Jonas Brodin was out at times with injuries. The older players, John Merrill, Alex Goligoski, were not reliable. I don't know where this blue line would have been without Brock Faber having a Calder Trophy award-winning kind of a rookie season. So when there's troubles with your goaltending and blue line, that is not a good start. So then go up front and just disappointing seasons for guys like Freddie Gaudreau and Marcus Johansson. I felt they took a step backwards. Marcus Foligno apparently was dealing with injuries a lot of the season. I just don't think you had your fire up front without a... I didn't think they're going to miss Ryan Reeves that much, but it just didn't really seem like there was just a lot of fire with this club this year. I felt like Ryan Hartman had a little bit of a bounce back season, but offensively, this was a one line team really with George Sinek, Matt Boldy, and Kirill Kaprizov, and then you had Marco Rossi chipping in with a 20 plus goal season from the second line. Other than that, it was offensively, if that first line wasn't clicking, you weren't getting a lot of scoring. And it just was, like I said, it was just an earmarks for a real bad season. They just had no success whatsoever against the upper echelon teams in their own division.
All of those are excellent points, Kevin. And I think about the fact that the injuries in particular stood out to me, not just because of how it hurt the big club, but I think it said a lot about the depth down at the Iowa Wild level, because we didn't really see anybody come up and deliver some remarkable season. I mean, I don't think we saw even somebody come up and deliver five goals over a 12 or 13 goal span, a 13 game span. There just didn't seem to be any depth down there. So if the club had an injury, they could bring guys up who played admirably, but didn't play at a level they needed them to do to keep this team afloat. And I think that says a lot about the direction this team needs to go across the organization, is that what are we doing to ensure that should we have injuries, do we have the guys that are ready to fill the void for us here? And what do we need to do to strengthen our organization long term? So that's really what I'm kind of taking away from this season, Kevin, is that there's a real need to start building up some depth.
And I think you have to remember then let's remember the elephant in the room, which is the big salary cap hit with the buyout from the Parise and Suter contracts. And I think we're seeing that is what suffers when you don't have that extra, $15 million to spend to get some depth. Because really the only guys they brought up or brought in last year for free agency were Jake Lucchini, who we knew was going to be a two-way player between Iowa and Minnesota, ended up being Minnesota quite a bit. Vinny Lettieri, who he ended up being a mainstay on the third, fourth lines because of lack of depth. And Pat Maroon, who ended up being traded to Boston at the trade deadline for Luke Toporowski. So, you know, it'll be an incomplete there depending on what kind of an upside we see from Toporowski. So I think we're seeing exactly how a team is affected by not having that salary cap money to spend. Granted, you know, a couple of bright sides had to be Dakota Mermis, you know, longtime captain in Iowa. Mm-hmm. He had a call up to Minnesota and made it work, and he never came back. So the year was a success for him, and Zach Bogosian seemed to have found a new life as a Minnesota Wild defenseman.
Well, let's quickly go to the two games for this past week, Kevin, to close out the season. Began with a 3-1 victory in Los Angeles. Boldy, Hartman, and Kaprizov each scored to make it 3-0. Kaprizov with his 45th goal of the season. It was a 3-0 lead before Los Angeles finally got on the board late in that contest. By that point, it was all but said, as Gustafson played fairly well in this game. Kevin stops 23 of 24 shots. The road has, you know, wasn't a great record on the road, Kevin, but finishing above 500 was, you know, I think a pretty solid performance by this club that has really struggled on the road over the past, I think, you know, for quite a while here, but got at least a solid performance. Just wasn't enough points this season.
And L.A. was a team they couldn't really touch in any of their other matchups this season, so it was nice to put a little damper on the end of their season, though it didn't really matter in the long run because Los Angeles still got the third spot in the Pacific Division. But, you know, in the way that's shaken out, I don't know. I'm wondering if you would rather play Dallas instead of Edmonton, but you know, that's a whole different topic. But, yeah, it was encouraging. You know, if a lot of talk up here in Minnesota right now, will Phil Gustafson be dealt in the offseason? Is Jesper Wallstedt ready to be the number one goalie? So that was the last game in a Wild sweater for Gustafson. It was a good one.
To close out the season was a pretty wild affair. Minnesota gets a goal from Kaprizov. His power play goal is 46th of the season in the first period. Seattle responds with a goal in the second. 1-1 coming out of the first two periods, but then just a wild third period that saw Seattle score three times, Minnesota score twice, Zuccarello with his 12th of the season, and Faber with his 8th scoring on the power play. That came with 1:05 left in the contest, and they just could not rally to get the final goal in that game to at least tie it or force overtime in some way or another there. But it is Seattle coming away with a 4-3 victory. Kevin, in this game, it is Marc-Andre Fleury playing, and he stops 23 of 26 shots, taking the loss of that game. You know, you and I have talked about this quite a bit over the last couple of months about a potential return for one more season. Did you come away from that thinking this was the last time we're going to see him in a Minnesota Wild uniform?
Well, a week ago Monday, he was signed to a one-year extension, so we know for sure that he will be back for the 24-25 season. So,
and what does that mean in goaltending here? What do you see as the goaltending for next season?
That's a $64,000 question. No one really seems to have a good answer for that because no matter what move you make, you're going to be questioned about it. If you go Gustafson Fleury, then maybe you're overcooking Wallstedt in the AHL, and he's going to get a little. He's going to feel a little discontent down there. If you go Wallstedt and Fleury, well, if Wallstedt shows that he's not quite ready for the NHL, and then you can't expect Fleury at 40 years old to be taking the lion's share of games. So you could be in a tough spot there. So, you know, Bill Guerin's got an awfully tough decision to make, a decision I can't even consider a correct answer to at this point.
I'm curious, because Gustafson was so good 2 years ago, was okay this season, looked great at times, looked fairly mediocre at other times. Is he the kind of guy you can trade away and get a fairly decent return, or would a lot of teams shy away from him thinking, yeah, we don't really know what we're getting here, and so you're not going to get anything of value that really helps this club for next season?
That's a problem. If you trade him after last year, yeah, you know, what they say, buy low, sell high, you know. They gave up Cam Talbot for him, so they bought low. And they would have been selling high after last season. But, you know, within that, is it a matter that Gustafson was also a victim of the defense in front of him? So, hard to say on that.
Yeah, I think the guy has shown flashes of brilliance. And you're saying, I think what's the big key for him is that this was a young, inexperienced, not very talented, I'm sorry for that characterization, defensive group in front of him. So, you know, if he had a little bit better group, you know, covering his back, so to speak, I think that they would sort of been a much better season for him. So, you know, if he wound up at a place like Edmonton, I could see that he could really back up Stuart Skinner. The two of them will be battling for each other. Winnipeg, he'd be a great backup there. I could see even him be having an incredible season in a place like Colorado or maybe even, you know, even Pittsburgh, you know. So I think that there's some life in there. And it's just, what do you get for him, I guess, is what Minnesota's got to be asking themselves.
You know, when you say it that way, too, you know, you mentioned several teams that could use a solid backup because, you know, like in Winnipeg, Laurent Brossoit had a really good season, but is he a guy that could be a free agent and want to move on to somewhere where he can start? Colorado, Shesterkin has been erratic, as everybody saw in Game 1 of the Winnipeg series, and they don't really have an established number two guy there. So same thing with Edmonton. When you get past Skinner, it's pretty iffy there. Vancouver. You know, after right. Thatcher Demko, Casey DeSmith was pretty mediocre this season. So you know, there could be a market for him, for a team that sees that his value as someone that if you got a good blue line in front of him, he could be a very good goalie.
And I think we've seen this season, you know, you and I were talking about 4 weeks ago about who was the top 10 or 12 goaltenders in terms of goals against average. And they weren't names that, you know, you and I would have said last season, hey, that's the number three goalie in the league or whatever. So it's like, if you just got in the right set, you know, the right position at that point, you could kind of have quite a career next year. I mean, you were having quite the season out there where you really can be successful and put up some big numbers. And all of a sudden, you're the hot commodity a couple of years from now. So I think Minnesota could get something for this guy. And I hope that they're – I really like Jesper Wallstedt. I got a few chances to talk to him, and I like his tenacity. I like his confidence in himself and just his game in general. And I think if they gave him a shot next year and he played 35, 37 games or something, he could seriously be – an 18-game winner for this club, maybe even 20, 21, something like that. I think he really could put up some solid numbers for them. So I hope that he gets that shot.
It's just hard to read with Wallstedt because, you know, we saw him get lit up by Dallas in his pro debut. He did get wins in San Jose and Chicago, but, I mean, we're talking about two of the cellar dwellers in the Western Conference, too. So, you know, I'm afraid Wallstedt's first chance to be a regular is going to be one of those situations where they're going to go with him, and we're going to have to find out the hard way whether he's ready for it or not.
Absolutely, and to you know, in all fairness, I think to him too, Kevin, and we'll talk about this club here in just a moment. But it wasn't like the group in front of him in Iowa was great either. So, I mean, that was a very young, inexperienced, some would say mediocre group down there too, but he still put up a pretty solid season down there. And so I don't really necessarily think that, Obviously, the NHL is a lot higher level of competition. I'm not refuting that in any way. But I think he's gotten kind of used to not getting much help. And so I'm interested to see how that plays at the NHL level for him.
I mean, we saw it in Iowa where, like, two nights before he was called up to get the start in Chicago, we saw him two nights earlier he had given up 7 goals to the Hershey Bears. So, you know, he had his bumps in the road down there too, like you said, in part to a green defensive line.
Well, talking about the Iowa Wild, Kevin, they finished with 2 victories, beating Grand Rapids on Friday 4-1 and Chicago 3-2. So the club finishes with 3-0-1 in their final 4 games of the season. You and I talked about this most of the season here, so I'm not going to harp on this very much about just not really sure what the direction of this club is right now. If you're the one thing you're always, you know, Iowa, you got to love those fans. They really, Des Moines has really supported this club very much. And I think if you got to feel pretty good about your fan base and what you can do here and how you can keep people attracted to hockey. So this club in a very good position, as long as they can start improving what's on the ice there a little bit.
That's the only real fault in the organization, really. And, you know, one night I was kind of out wandering around, had some time before I had to get in the arena, and I walked by the team offices, and that team has collected a lot of awards for stuff off the ice.
Yep.
You know, just for, like, game night ops and community stuff. It's a very well-run organization. And the attendance, you know, it's upper to the middle pack in the American Hockey League, but, you know, it's not, you know, Des Moines not your hugest market either. So I think for what they draw a night in the community they're in, you know, that's very good. It's just the one weakness is just ever since their little run around between 2019-2020, it's just the wins have not been there. But, you know, the people keep coming back because they know they're going to have an entertaining night out.
Yeah, COVID did terrible things for this organization. That 2019.
I would have loved to have seen where that 2019-2020 club would have wound up because they were just a fabulous hockey club. I would have loved to have seen how that season would have ended up.
Yes, I would have too, because they were in second place in the Western Conference, but were rising up against I think it was Milwaukee, but the team that had the top record, and because they got off to a fast start and were hanging on to that, but Iowa was quickly rising up, and their guy Kaapo Kähkönen was amazing. They had that power play that Kyle Rowe, Sam Annis, and Jerry Mayhew were just—you couldn't stop them. I mean, they were just—you could guarantee that the way that they set up that little pyramid for scoring goals was just unstoppable. And I thought, oh my God, this team is so good. And then crummy COVID crap happens, and there we are. So what could have been?
Yeah, it was funny. Well, just the other day, I was on the Facebook, like the kids like to go on, and one of my memories popped up was a highlight video from game one of the 2018-2019 playoffs against Milwaukee, and boy, the memories just hit, like you said, all those names you brought up, and, you know, others like Cal O'Reilly and Colton Beck. Just, it was just so, such a great team that season. And, you know, it was Easter Sunday in Des Moines, Iowa, and it's like 80 degrees out, and you still had 5,000 people show up to a playoff game. That was incredible, and I think if this club got it together on the ice and went on any kind of a playoff run, I think you would just see some incredible crowds come out for that. In a sport in which, at the minor league level, it's tough to draw for playoff games because you don't get the group sales, you don't have too much time to promote the games, where you have to count on your season ticket holders and a lot of walk-up sales. But I think Des Moines would just come out in droves for a really good playoff run by this Iowa Wild team. And let's just hope that sooner than later.
Yeah, I hope so too. Well, quickly, Kevin, what you just mentioned, 4-1 victory over Grand Rapids on Friday. It's just Revolstead between the pipes in this game. He stopped 31 shots. And what could be his final game for Iowa? Is he could very well be up at the big club this season. Four different goal scorers in the game, including Adam Beckman with his 18th of the season. Iowa scores twice in the power play. They do give up a power play goal themselves, but a very solid performance out of this team. I'm just going to have reach into that crystal ball there, Kevin. Is that the last game Jester Volstead plays for Iowa?
Well, I guess, you know, it's all depend on the stuff we just talked about 5 minutes ago. So right now your guess is as good as mine. I think we're going to see definitely a different looking goaltending tandem in Iowa next season.
But let's talk about that, Kevin. 3-2 victory over Chicago in Chicago on Saturday. It is Jack Peart scoring the game winner, making a great play to wind up coming away with the unassisted goal with a little over 7 minutes left in that contest. It's Zane McIntyre stopping 19 of 21 shots to get the win. Is that his final game in an Iowa Wild uniform?
I got a feeling it could be his final game in a uniform altogether. When he was let go by the Tucson Roadrunners, I mean, they talked him into coming back and being a goalie for the Iowa Wild. I mean, heck, he was at a Minnesota Wild game just as a fan one game, and then a week later he's playing for the Iowa Wild. So, you know, he just didn't really seem to get on track this year, and he too was probably a victim of the play in front of him. But I just got a feeling that Zane and the Wild are just going to go in different directions, and I just have a hunch with Zane that could be retirement, and I think he would be an excellent goalie coach.
So born in 92, August this year, he will be 32, and that's for a goaltender, that's getting up there a little bit,
to be on the AHL level, you know.
Yeah, so that's up there a little bit. I mean, hate to be sitting here 56 years old talking about a 32-year-old is old, but at a goaltender, though, that can be a little bit old, and clearly, he's shown in recent years that he's got the stuff. 2.87 goals against average last season, 2.45 with Iowa after being released by Tucson the year before. Was excellent in Lehigh Valley with a 2.33 goals against average in 2021. So he's got the stuff, but man, this season was so tough for him. And you talked about it, though. The defense was just not non-existent in Des Moines. So I guess it's at that age-old question, Kevin, is that do you just want to get yourself to another 4 months of working hard every day and preparing yourself for 8 grueling months out on the road all the time? And maybe Zane is just done. So I guess we'll be going to see what he's got in the tank still.
You know, and I can't pronounce the guy's name that the Wild have signed. But, you know, they're bringing in a new goalie. And I'm sure they're not bringing him in to just have him sit in Iowa. So I have a feeling they want him to be getting games next year. So I'm thinking the plan would be to have this goalie play and Kyle McClellan, who they had also signed for a two-way contract to an AHL contract for next year. I have a feeling that would probably be your tandem if Volstead is up with Minnesota.
And you also got to think, too, is that the organization seemed pretty high on the performance of Peyton Jones this last year, too. So, you know, his name gets thrown into the mix. Hunter Jones probably done in the organization. Drew DeRitter could very well be the number one goaltender down there in Coralville this year. So this is going to be a very dramatic offseason, I think, for the Minnesota Wild organization.
It's not going to be a dull one. You know, it sucks that none of the teams are in the playoffs currently, but I have a feeling it's going to be a very newsworthy offseason.
and well deserved out of that too. So, well, Kevin, just to quickly recap out here, the Minnesota Wild finish in fourth place in the wild card standings. They finished with 87 points, 39, 34, and 9. They were 2016 and 5 at home and 19, 18, and 4 on the road. The one thing I'm just looking at this Western Conference is if you just during the regular season for sure, powerhouse conference in terms of, you know, this record, it seems like every year. The 98 points was the team that made the final playoff spot this season. I think that's where you got to be at every year. If you don't have 100 points in this conference, you are just not making the playoffs. And so 87 points, maybe that was great 12 years ago, but you're not going anywhere with that these days.
Well, it was good back when you had the system where you didn't get the loser point for losing in overtime or in the shootout. I mean, that's with the addition of that, that's really warped the way we think of the point system. And frankly, you know, maybe at this juncture, I know it. You like to keep tradition and everything, but are we at the point now where we maybe go to a system where it's 3 points for a regulation win, 2 for overtime win, and 1 for overtime shootout loss?
I think we should. And that's exactly where we should be at. Matter of fact, in my way, Kevin, I would say you get 3 points for a regular season win. A regular game win, okay? Regulation, that's the term I was looking for. You get 2 for a overtime win. 1 point goes to the losing team in that. You get 2 points for a shootout win, and the team that loses in the shootout gets nothing at all. And I think that makes the team on the losing end of that really fight in that overtime to try to get, you know, even you'd rather give up the goal. You'd rather lose in that than nothing. So I think that would dramatically change the game. So that's just my thought. So
I would be all right with ditching the overtime and just doing ditching the shootout and going with like a 10-minute overtime, 3-on-3. I just think if you have that extra 5 minutes that would solve a lot more of the games. But then I don't know, then what do you do if you're tied after overtime, how you're going to distribute your points out there? Maybe both teams only get
one for each.
I don't know.
Yeah, one for each, yeah. And, you know, I think you want teams in that overtime fighting more to try to win. You know, I mean, I think that's something they should really be trying to do here. And if you're saying, well, 10 minutes is a lot of time, they're playing 7 at the AHL level. So it's not really like these guys can play 10 minutes. You know what I mean? 3 extra minutes if a lot further on these guys. So it's not that big of a leap.
No, and really, I mean, as far as time-wise, I think it would probably take you as long as it would take to do whatever ice maintenance they do again, right, and then having a shootout.
Yep, I think you're right. Well, Kevin was right about the Washington Capitals grabbing that final playoff spot out in the East, as it was Washington that opened up the playoff round, taking on the New York Rangers. They are down 2-0 in that series, and we'll go through the series in a moment here, Kevin. But what was it about Washington that made you believe they were going to wind up grabbing that final spot?
I thought it was the veteran leadership on the team with Tom Wilson, Alex Ovechkin, TJ Oshie, you know, guys that have been involved in close playoff races before. I just felt like that was the difference, was the leadership on the team.
Now, I have been very down on the New York Islanders. I still don't understand how this team made the playoffs, but they have Patrick Waugh as their coach, and I really like Patrick Waugh a lot, so I was happy they made that spot. How much of a difference do you see that was he the reason this team is sitting in the playoffs?
I think it is. I think he brings a fire to the teams he coached. We saw what he did with the Colorado Avalanche, but, you know, as they say about some coaches, you know, he's got a 3-year act and a 5-year contract. So, you know, he initially got the team going, but in the long run, will he be the answer for the Islanders? And Frankie, the act wore thin a bit in Colorado, so you just got to wonder if, you know, if the Islanders will respond to him in this series against Carolina, that they're already down 2-0, or will they respond next season?
You know, this is where I think the NHL is just different than everybody else, okay, in terms of the mentality of players and coaches. Nowadays, if a coach in NFL, Major League Baseball, basketball, whatever, was yelling at players and being more of a disciplinarian, he'd be run out of town in like 9 minutes. Okay, they'd be crying all the time. They'd be out in the media. That still works in the NHL. And I think it says a lot more about the serious warrior mentality of NHL players. Would you agree with that?
Well, it's a league that still has John Tortorella as a coach because, I mean, he has made a career out of being that demanding coach that he might wear thin with some players, but there are some guys that would do anything for him.
Yeah, he's a great example. You know, I mean, that's a very fiery coach who will say some crazy stuff, even about his own players, but they think they all know ultimately he's got their back. And he may say some crazy thing to you out in front of some, you know, about you in front of some reporters, but he'd go to the mat for you in a heartbeat if you were struggling on something. So, but it's just interesting because these guys are, you know, will say some crazy stuff at some times, but they're still in their job. And I think for sure, if you were in the NBA talking that crazy about players, they'd have you run out in no time. But
well, you look at a player like Cutter Gauthier, number one pick of Flyers, and he just flat out said that he didn't want to go to Philadelphia. And if you want to read the tea leaves, I think a big reason would be because I think he was intimidated by John Tortorella as a head coach.
Yeah.
And well, we saw Cutter Gauthier's character in the Frozen Four, where he pretty much said that he was going to be scoring 2 goals, and the team in the other locker room would be crying at the end of the night. And well, we saw who was crying after Denver shut out the Boston College Eagles.
Well, looking at the playoff series, Kevin, as you mentioned, New York up 2-0 on Washington. Carolina also up 2-0 on the Islanders. It's 1-0 as you and I are talking here tonight for Florida over Tampa Bay. Boston.
Well, it just
Toronto
turned to 2-0.
2-0. Okay, so Florida winds up extending that out there to 2-0. Boston and Toronto tied at 1. Of those 2-0 series, Florida, Tampa, New York, and Carolina, sweeps for any of those?
Well, I'm not ruling it out, but I just think just seems like in this NHL nowadays, home ice is just so huge in the early rounds. You get later in the playoffs, it doesn't seem to mean as much, but well, I got a feeling that both those teams will have one or two in them.
You talked about Vegas stuns Dallas in the game one of that series. Does Vegas upset Dallas, do you think?
Well, if it does, my NHL bracket is cooked. So.
How about Vancouver-Nashville?
Well, I've got I'm saying Nashville's gonna win that one, and we got news today that Thatcher Demko will be out for game two and possibly the entire series for the Canucks. And you know, as we were just talking about on the show, you know, there's not a lot of goalie depth with the Canucks.
Yeah, DeSmith is not. I mean, he's looked very good at times, but he's looked really mediocre at other times. And this is not the time to find out what he's got in the tank, I personally think. So just quickly, a couple of these series I think have great matchups. Can Los Angeles do anything against Edmonton?
I've got Edmonton picked to win that series.
And what about Colorado-Winnipeg?
I went with Colorado, but after game one, I'm really starting to regret it because I just don't think Shesterkin is going to be able to shut down the Avalanche. And you know, the Onanen kid, of which we've seen play quite a bit for the Colorado Eagles, I would like to see him get a shot. And, you know, he's been very good when he's been given a chance. So don't be surprised if you see Astus Onanen in the pipes for Colorado at some point in the series. But, you know, I don't – Winnipeg, I guess, has shown some firepower now where Colorado's going to get their goals. But if you can't take care of your own end right now, you don't have the goalies that are going to keep the puck out of your own net.
Well, let's end on this, Kevin, because Austin Matthews, 69 goals this season, had a phenomenal year. Just amazing. His rival, Nikita Kucherov, scored, has 144 points. Look at Colorado with Nathan MacKinnon. Who do you like for MVP?
I think Nathan MacKinnon's the best player in the league. That's, you know, even, I think he is, I think even better than Connor McDavid of all people.
That's some pretty high praise. You gotta like that. Kevin, thanks for joining me this week.
My pleasure. Thanks for another season of doing this.